Hi there. It's time for an hour of storytelling. Today, the kinds of stories that might be told around a campfire. As the shadows get longer and the light slips away, this time of year, near the cross-quarter day between the fall equinox and the winter solstice, the membrane that separates our world from the other world gets stretched thin, and sometimes we get a glimpse of the other side. Stay tuned for Friends and Neighbors with stories of visitations on Stay Human. First teller today, Susan Schenker.
You know, I always think a ghost story should start with a dark and stormy night, but unfortunately this one doesn't because it's in sunny Florida. So the year would be 1984. My college roommate Joni and I had just graduated from the Colorado Institute of Art, and we had friends in Florida, so we decided to head down to St. Pete, and we found what we thought was the perfect apartment. It was on Clearwater Beach, just not too far from the beach. And it was one of those old, that looks like a motel, the three-story long rectangle, you know, with, you walk up the stairs and you go all the way down the second floor, walk up, go all the way down the third floor. The apartment was third floor on the west side of the building, which is awesome. It means you only have neighbors on one side and below. It's a corner unit. There were no units behind it, so the back of the apartment looked out over houses behind, and we thought, perfect. So we gathered up all our stuff, moved on in, and it was maybe the second or third day we were there. My roommate said, I was going to put that poster up that was laying here on the floor by this box. She goes, did you do something with it? And I'm like, no. I said, why? And she says, well, it's gone. And I said, well, it was there yesterday. And she said, well, I can't find it. And I'm like, okay. It was just the two of us and the cat. So we were like, went on a massive hunt. Couldn't find the poster anywhere. It's like, oh, that's kind of odd. Went off to bed. Got up the next morning to get ready to go to work. And here's the poster on the floor next to the box. I asked her, I said, Joni, I said, did you find it and put it back there? She said, no. She said, what the heck? And I had this kitty that was living with us. Her name was Alex. And she's a black and white tuxedo cat. She's got piercing green eyes. She's super smart. And like her favorite thing to do is go for rides in the car. She's a strange cat. But she's just no fear girl. I mean, nothing fazes her. And I taught her how to beg for treats. So she'd sit up on her back feet like a dog. And so, I don't know, one day I was coming into the apartment and here she's sitting in front of a closet. And I was like, you know, kitty, what's going on? And she's just staring at the closet just intently. And she wouldn't look at me. And she just kept staring at that closet. And then pretty soon she sat up and begged and just held the pose for a few seconds, and then she freaked. She took off running, she went under the bed, and she would not come out. And I kept thinking, what is wrong with this cat? And so I went and tried to get her out from under the bed, she wouldn't come. Her tail was huge, and her eyes were just like black, and she was totally freaked out. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. Wonder what's going on in the closet. So then you get that kind of tingling, this is a little odd. So I went and I opened the closet door. Of course, I was shaking and I was kind of freaked out. And here in the closet, we had stacked boxes, things that wouldn't fit in the rest of the apartment. So everything was this perfect puzzle stacked situation. And right in the middle was a missing box. And it was like, it would have even been hard to get your fingers in there to pull the darn thing out, let alone have everything still stacked around it perfectly. So I asked Joni when she got home that night, said, did you perchance take a box out of the closet? Told her the story. She's like, no. She goes, that's your side of the closet. You know, I'm not going in there. And I'm like, well, I was just in there day before yesterday. The box was there. So, okay, now what? So we took a deep breath and we said, well, that's pretty strange. No explanation for the cat. So we went about our business. So the next day I checked the closet and the box was back. So things would happen similar to that, kind of on and off. Things would appear, disappear. A couple days later, they'd be back. We kind of thought we were losing it, but it's like, okay. Another time the cat did the same thing. She'd sit at the closet and just stare at that closet for like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. She'd just sit there. And then she'd run and hide under the bed. It's like, what is going on? So as the story progressed, he just kept doing things. And then it got to the point where you could tell if he came into the room, because all the hair would stand up on the back of your neck and you'd get this weird crawling sensation. And I would look at Joni and I'd go, he's here. And she'd go, yeah, I know. So this went on for a while. And one night, went to bed, and in my bedroom, at the end of the bed was the closet. And of course, this wasn't a real nice apartment, so the closet doors were paneling, so they were shiny. And the light from the alley and the bedroom window, of course, came in there and those just made that closet shiny. And I couldn't sleep that night. I don't know why. I couldn't figure out, couldn't get comfortable, just couldn't sleep. And so I dozed off and I woke up and there was someone standing at the end of my bed. And I was like, wait a minute, what? I closed my eyes. It's like, no, there's nobody here. Can't be somebody standing at the end of my bed. Open my eyes again. Someone standing at the end of my bed. It was just a shadow. It was a tall, slender man, just a shadow. His shoulders seemed kind of sharp, like maybe he was wearing a suit, but he was just a dark shadow. Oh gosh, it's him. Great. We just sat there for what seemed like an eternity, but I'm sure it was just a few seconds. And close my eyes again, and I'm like, oh gosh, now what? Open my eyes again, he was gone. So I laid there, my heart was racing. It actually kind of is a little bit right now as I tell the story. So I laid there and I thought about it for a little while, and all of a sudden I didn't feel scared. I didn't feel upset. I felt very, very calm. It was a really strange sensation. Kind of tried to think about it a little bit, but I was just really relaxed all of a sudden. And so I just went to sleep. And when I woke up in the morning, I don't know, it was like, what happened? So I went out, I got a big cup of coffee. I'm like, oh, Joni's gonna love this story. She came out and I said, we gotta talk. And she goes, yeah, we do. And I said, why, what happened? And she said, well, I saw the ghost last night. And her tale with the ghost was that someone had come into her room. She said she was kind of half awake, half asleep. And she, for some reason, thought it was her boyfriend who wasn't there, but she was kind of half awake and half asleep. And she said, oh, knock that off, you know, go back to sleep. But he wasn't even there. And she goes, and then I realized he wasn't there, but she said by then, whoever it was gone. And she goes, it was just a weird thing. It was like a shadow. And she goes, but the weird thing was he was wearing a hat. And I said, don't even. And she goes, yeah, he was wearing a hat. And I said, a derby hat? And she said, yes, a derby hat. And I went, well, who I saw was wearing a derby hat also. So we decided that he just wanted to be known, I guess. So we said, well, just wait it out and see. Turns out that his antics became way less after that. And he came around a few times. You could tell, I mean, you could feel him when he came into the room. You'd get that tingling sensation, and I don't know. And I think in the end, he just wanted to be seen. I don't know. I hope whatever his path was, he found it.
Our next visitation comes to us from storyteller, musician, and radio producer Leah Lem.
I've been asked a few times now from various people if I have a ghost story or have seen a ghost. And I think I've seen a spirit or two here and there, but I don't think of it as scary or strange, more like exhilarating or an honor. But this particular ghost story happened about 10 or 11 years ago, but I remember the evening very vividly, and it's sort of a two-parter. It's almost like the spirit insisted on being seen. Okay, so my husband and I used to live near Cathedral Hill in St. Paul in an old building. We lived on the second floor facing Selby Avenue. Our bedrooms and living room windows looked across to another residential complex. And if you're not familiar, Selby Avenue is a main road through town. There's plenty of traffic. And one night, I was taking a nap in the early evening. I had odd hours working in radio, so my sleep schedule was likewise odd. And as I was lying on the couch in our living room with my eyes closed, I saw a flash of light from inside my head, kind of, if that makes sense. And it moved, this light moved around like I could see beyond the walls of our apartment. So when I was laying there, eyes closed, it looked like the light was far away that was happening inside my head. It's hard to describe. And the light seemed frantic or excited, like it had personality. Like it was like I was witnessing intentional movement. So I laid there awake, eyes closed, and watched for several moments. Didn't really think too much of it. It did seem a little odd, but I mean, it's a flash of light, right? Not much to think about. But maybe 15 to 20 minutes later, I was still laying there. An ambulance arrived at the building across the street, right across from the window in the living room where I was laying. And I looked out the window where the ambulance was. And unfortunately, the paramedics brought someone out of the building a while later, and this person didn't seem like they were doing very well. I didn't have the best view, but they were wheeled into the ambulance on a gurney deliberately, but there didn't seem to be a rush, and the ambulance quietly drove away. And now that I live where I can't see any neighbors from any windows, it's strange to think how closely we lived to complete strangers in the cities. And I realized the person on the gurney that I saw that day lived closer to me than my nearest neighbor does now. I don't know. I just think that's a different perspective that I noticed from moving out of town. Anyway, it could have ended there and been a sad event to witness. But the next part is the real deal. So I'll preface this by saying that I have had sleep paralysis, waking dreams, lucid dreams since I was early teens. I'm used to it, and I know the difference between being conscious and not. I know the feeling. The breathing is more difficult, and what seems to be hallucinations that happen. If you're not familiar with sleep paralysis, I recommend checking it out. It's pretty rad and disturbing. Before you know what it is, if it happens to you. So I have this history of being very aware of how it feels to be awake or not awake. So anyway, that very night I woke up, and I will never forget what I saw. The light from the street lamps, remember, busy street, the light came into the bedroom through the closed blinds, and my side of the bed was closest to the window, and right next to me, between the window and the bed, stood a man. An older man in a red plaid shirt and jeans. You know, plaid shirt tucked in, like he was off to go to Costco, like just put together, and his waist was about bed height, so his legs disappeared into the floor. And the horizontal streams of light from the window blinds behind him shone through his figure. So he was transparent. And we stared at each other. I did a self-check to make sure I wasn't asleep. In fact, I was very much awake. And years later, as a parent, I learned there's this instinctive reaction to your child needing you in the middle of the night. All of a sudden, it's help mode. And that's sort of how I felt at that moment, like this being or spirit needed to be seen. And I wasn't scared at all. The man was not threatening. It felt very matter of fact. And I can't say how long he was there, but thinking back, it was probably 10 seconds. Go ahead and count out 10 seconds. It feels pretty long in a moment like that. And also, I can't say if my experiences that night were connected at all. The flash, the neighbor being taken away by the ambulance, and my visitor. But all together like that, I just won't forget that evening. And I should say, I feel really honored that this person chose to come visit me before they moved on.
Thanks to Leah Lem. Up next from Bemidji, Sarah Nimmes. She told this story of a haunting at a live event at Headwaters Music and Arts in Bemidji. I wasn't there, but a friend was, and he said, you gotta hear this. Sarah Nimmes.
So this is a story that begins when I was living in Egypt doing research on the shrines of Muslim saints. And one saint was of particular interest to me, and her name was Sheikha Sabah. She was of interest to me because in her life, she wanted to be an imam. That's the leader of a community of Muslims, but that wasn't allowed for girls, so she couldn't. But she refused to marry, and she spent her life studying Quran and other devotions and just devoting her life to study and prayer. And so during her lifetime, she became famous for her wisdom and for helping the sick and also for helping women who were having fertility issues, having trouble getting pregnant. So after she died, they built a shrine to her in Tanta, which is a city in the Nile Delta north of Cairo. And people would go to visit her, especially women, to make offerings, and they would be praying for miracles from the saint. So I went to visit her shrine, and these shrines, they're old, these old stone buildings with a big dome over the top, and in the middle is this marble coffin, and it's always lit with green lights, so it's very eerie, and it's covered in flowers and lace and has this decorative kind of gate around it, because if you were to open the coffin, it's actually the entryway to a staircase that leads down into a crypt. And the crypt is sort of the basement of the shrine, and there would be a bunch of corpses stacked up on shelves in the crypt. And then in the gate, there were these little notes written on paper that would be tucked in there, and those were people's prayers. All the shrines in Egypt have this quite distinct smell. It's a mixture of incense and dust and then the moist stone and wilting flowers. So it's a very strong smell, and it smells like death and magic. So during my visit, I said some prayers and I made my offerings to the Sheikha. And then the Khedim, which is the custodian of the shrine, he insisted on giving me a piece of the decorative lace that covers the shrine, because I came all the way from America to honor the Sheikha. So he wanted me to take something with me. So I put it in a shopping bag and I left. Then when I got back to my apartment in Cairo, I took this little piece of lace out of the shopping bag, and immediately the whole apartment was full of the smell of the shrine, this sweet, musty, dusty smell. So I tucked it into a Ziploc bag and closed it, but I could still smell the smell very strongly. So then I wrapped that in cloth and I put it into another plastic bag and Ziploc'd that. And then I tucked it under the sink and sort of opened all the windows to air the apartment out. And at this time in my life, I was in the process of divorcing my ex-husband, who was Egyptian himself. And there was a lot of back and forth where we tried to make it work, and then we would fight again, and it was quite difficult. It was just it was a time in my life where I was very fixated on that relationship. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I wanted. So he brought my kids back. He had been looking after them while I was traveling to the shrine. And then that evening, while I was washing dishes, I thought I saw my little daughter come into the kitchen. And when I turned around to tell her to go back to bed, it was not my daughter. It was a little ghost girl. And I could see this ghost as clear as day. She was about 6 years old with long black hair and this little white nightgown. I saw her so clearly just for an instant, and then she was gone. So I don't know if you've ever been face to face with a ghost before, but it kind of turns you to ice. Like I just stood there, no breath, no heartbeat, just staring at the place in the corner where I saw this little ghost for what felt like a very long time. So at this point I said, sorry, Sheikha Sabah, I have so much admiration for you and your strength, but I am done with you now. And so I took that bag out of the kitchen, I brought it down to the street and put it in a trash can. But Sheikha Sabah was not done with me yet. Fast forward about a year later, our whole family had moved to Qatar, which is a country in the Arabian Peninsula. And my ex had married this woman who hated me. And I had started dating someone else who was from India. He was Hindu and he was a vegetarian, which caused all sorts of drama in the house in terms of what the kids were eating. So although many things had changed, a lot of my energy was still caught up in this relationship chaos. So after a particularly dramatic day, I was in the bathroom brushing my teeth and I heard this little voice say, "Mama." And I don't know if you've ever heard a ghost speak, but besides turning the body to ice, something happens to your hearing. Like someone hit the off button on that kind of internal dialogue and then turned the volume way up, like you turn it up on a speaker. So there's that kind of buzz when there's no music playing. And so I could hear like a moth flying in another room. So when the voice came back in, it sounded loud, like, "Mama." And I ran out of the bathroom, jumped into the bottom bunk with my little daughter, and I just held her in my arms and slept there in the night. And I thought, I know that that's the same little ghost from Egypt. So I didn't even really think about this until another year later when she started coming to me as night terrors. And I was back in the US at this time. I was trying to do a long distance relationship with my boyfriend who was back in India. I knew there was dishonesty about some things, there were some broken promises, and I was still kind of in this like relationship obsession. And I don't know if you've ever had a night terror, but basically I would have a nightmare of this girl. I would see her with her long black hair and her little white nightgown, and her face was like a dark pile of ashes. And I would wake up, but I couldn't move my body and I could still see her in the room. So it was just terrifying, just awful. So I reached out to a friend of mine who's a psychic, and I asked her, how do I exorcise this ghost? She's been haunting me for years now. And my friend said, she's not a ghost. She's not coming to haunt you. She's coming to help you. And I said, but it's so scary. It doesn't feel like help. And she said, she only seems scary because what she's coming to help you do scares you. So she gave me some advice, which I followed, and that was to visualize the ghost and just ask her, what are you trying to help me do? So I did this, and the ghost answered with just one word, and it was solitude. And as soon as she said it, I knew exactly what she meant. I had spent all these years embroiled in relationship drama, demanding and complaining and blaming and scheming, all of that, and nothing was scarier to me than looking inside without that to distract me and really just focus on myself. So I guess you could say that Sheikha Sabah, she scared me smart because I broke up with my boyfriend. And for the following 10 years, I walked the path of Sheikha Sabah, no dating, just studying and meditation and taking care of my kids. And I haven't heard from that little ghost since.
Thanks to Sarah Nimes. You are tuned to the Visitations edition of Stay Human on KAXE KBXE, streaming at kaxe.org. We're People Powered Radio, serving the Northwoods because of the support of our listeners. Join us anytime at that website, kaxe.org, where you'll also find local features, podcasts, and more. Coming up, we have a couple of stories with visitations of a different kind, Lucid Dreaming from Gus Schenker. But first, from the Stay Human Archives, Aaron Wenger tells the story of the Holiday Angel.
It was a dark morning, dark because of the cloud cover, dark because of the blowing snow. It was cold, and it was, you know, mid-March or something, and I wanted it to be over. I was in a dark mood. Carolyn and I, as part of our regular routine, often drive some vehicle in. This morning it was the snowplow truck because I was going to need it later. Drive some vehicle in, and we stop at a gas station. I get an orange juice for Carolee, I get a cookie or something, and I get a coffee, and most importantly, the newspaper for us. And then we go someplace and read the newspaper. This morning, we had two dogs with us. That's often the case also. They've come to know that cookies come out of that place. So I'm standing there in the gas station waiting for my coffee to drop down out of the automatic coffee maker. Not in a very good mood. I certainly would have resembled at least a cranky old man in that morning. And I noticed this fellow as I walked in the door dressed heavily, heavier than we dress up here for winter. A real heavy cap, heavy coat, sorrel-like boots on. And I also noticed that in a funny way, he was extraordinarily easy on the eyes. I don't want to say handsome. I don't know what that means. But easy on the eyes. He almost radiated a calmness that invited you into his space. And I don't do that. I don't make small talk ever, really, with strangers. I've come to expect the worst of it. You make small talk and they tell you something you don't want to hear. I've become skeptical, I guess, about it. But my coffee was brewing. It wasn't down in the cup yet. And he walked over to me. And the first words out of his mouth were, "Are you having a lovely morning?" I thought, "What?" I looked at him. He says, "No." He says, "Are you loving the morning that you're in?" Well, I could see right now this was not an ordinary conversation. I was a little speechless. I said, "Yeah, I guess so. It's dark and it's crummy out, but I guess I'm loving the morning I'm in." He said, "Good. You should." We chatted a little more, little weather, stuff like that. And I asked him, I said, "Where are you from?" Oh, he says, "Down south, way down south." That would explain the clothes. Well, I said, what are you going to do?" I was expecting maybe that he was going to panhandle. Honest to gosh, I guess that's the skepticism I've become infected with. And I was kind of making a mental note. How much money do I have in my pocket? Oh, he says, "I'm traveling." Oh, and this calmness just invited you to stand in the circle of it. It's like being around a campfire when you're cold. It invited me to stand there. And I did. And I said something to him about, "Well, I hope your morning goes better than mine." The coffee was done. I had made all the small talk I could do. And I left him and walked up to the counter to pay. Went out to the truck. Carolee and the dogs were waiting in the truck for me. Truck was running. And I got in and turned to my right to speak to Carol and tell her about this extraordinary person I had just met. And I noticed out of the corner of my left eye, he was standing there, standing by the truck window. Again, you know, all the skepticism of an old man bubbles up. Ah, he's going to want something. I rolled my window down. And he said, "Would you mind if I blessed you?" What? What? Never in my life has anyone ever asked that question. What? I'm thinking. Well, I said, "No, of course not." And he proceeded to sort of straighten the way that he stood and took a kind of formal pose with his hands crossed over his chest. It was obviously a pose he had done before, I think. And he proceeded to bless us. And he called Carol by name in the blessing. I had never mentioned her name once in our conversation. He got done, and Carol was as speechless as I was. There was nothing to be said except that it felt good to be in this person's presence. Well, I did all I could do. I said to him, "I have a blessing for you." And I wished him safe travels and a loving day. He went, turned away from the window, and walked to the back of the truck, past the truck. Carolee and I could hardly move the truck. We were so taken with this. But I put it in gear, and I pulled away from the gas pump maybe 10 feet. I couldn't stand it. I had to see the man again. I jumped out of the truck, and I went towards the back where he had gone. He wasn't there. He wasn't down the street. He wasn't back in the station. I never saw him again. And all I can say is, I do indeed wish that man fine travels.
It's always a surprise when you get a message from the other side. But in our next story, the message comes from closer to home. Here's Gus Schenker.
Back in the early 80s, I was stressed out of my life from a bad relationship with a crazy classical musician who was career-driven, and she valued her career more than any relationship she could have been in. So we were breaking up, or had broke up. And it was also a period where I had sold my business of 13 years. And I was trying to decide who or what I was going to be next. So I was kind of floundering, wondering what to do next. And I met a Swiss woman named Claudine Jean Renaud, who happened to be a certified Jungian psychologist. And I decided to participate in dream therapy. Jungian psychology was developed by Carl Jung. He was a contemporary of Sigmund Freud, and his work has been very influential in the field of psychiatry, anthropology, literature, psychology, and religious science, which was what I was interested in at the time. Carl Jung believed that religion was a natural part of human consciousness. On the other hand, Sigmund Freud thought religion was a form of collective neurosis. There were very different points of view here. Carl Jung saw dreams as a person's psyche's attempt to communicate important things to the person in his waking state. And Claudine told me to keep a journal next to my bed of the dreams. And in first thing in the morning, write down what the dream was, or if you woke up in the middle of the night. And she told me something that literally changed my life. And it was that people have the ability, if they try hard enough, to lucid dream, to go into a lucid dream state. And she told me that if something is threatening you in a dream, chasing you, you're afraid of it. If you turn and face it, it will dissolve, change, or melt away, or not be threatening. I was living in Colorado near a town called Kiowa. And one night I was driving home late at night after work. And in the sky, I saw a shooting star or a meteor flash in front of the auto that I was driving. It was really the brightest falling star that I'd ever seen in my life. And it lasted maybe 5 seconds or so before it vanished over the horizon. So in the dream that night, and I'm going to read this part, I was outside my house in the evening when the sky lit up with a meteor, brightest flash that I could remember. It was so close, I could hear it cutting through the air with a hissing and snapping sound. It hit the ground in the field at the top of my hill, and I couldn't believe it. I ran up the hill to have a better look. As I got closer, I could see in the moonlight smoke rising from the spot that I thought that it landed, not far away from me. When I got to the impact spot, there was a figure sitting cross-legged on the ground, both arms outstretched and hands pointing up, palms up. I thought, who's this stranger? What is this? I got a little closer, and gosh, it looked like the Hindu god Vishnu, their protector of the universe. I was stunned. No way, I thought. I got to tell somebody about this. I ran back to my house. There was a crowd of people for some reason. The first few people I told weren't at all interested in what I had to say, kind of waved me off and, you know, mumbled. As I moved through this crowd of people, I came across someone who was playing a piano. I looked at the keys. They were all glowing bright indigo blue, as if they were backlit by some LEDs. I thought, oh, nice. I joined the player on the left side of the keyboard, only playing the black keys. It was wonderful. Suddenly I thought, what am I doing? What about the meteor on the hill? I got to go back. This time from a distance, it looked like the thing was digging into the ground as I approached. But as I got closer, I realized that it wasn't digging in, but digging out. The alien stood up. It was wearing a shiny coat of metallic armor. The breastplate was like a mirror. I could see myself in it for a moment. Suddenly, the alien drew a long sword and made a threatening move toward me. I was afraid, but I opened my arms, palms up, outstretched, and took a step toward it. At that very moment, the alien dropped the sword and ran toward me. I opened my arms. I could see its eyes. We embraced into one thing. Its hair turned from black to red, and I woke up. Now, to me, what Claudine had told me earlier in my therapy sessions was that if you can face your fear in a dream, you will overcome it. And that's what happened to me in this dream. This dream I had 39 years ago. It was a long time ago. And had I not had a journal, putting this stuff down in a journal, I probably wouldn't have remembered it in the same way. All I could remember about some of the details was the embrace when we hugged each other. And it was it wasn't about, really what I was doing was hugging myself. And the stranger was really me. It was part of myself that I didn't know.
Thanks to Gus Schenker. Thank you. I'm Michael Goldberg, and I don't usually take the call if it's a number I don't know, but this one time I did. Is this the Michael Goldberg who's the son of Roz and Sid? I'm Jack Myers. I don't know if you remember me. My ex-wife Barbara and I were friends of theirs in L.A. When I tried to locate you, I found out about your mother's passing. I'm sorry, but that's the reason I'm calling. And you can just ignore this or whatever, but okay. I dreamed I was driving, and suddenly there was your mother right in front of the car, and I guess I hit her because she went down. I jumped out of the car, and then I woke up, sort of. I mean, I was awake in my bed, and I felt there was someone in the room. Who's there? I said. And I heard a voice. Rose. Rosie. Roz? Is that you? Yes, she said. What can I do for you? I stammered. I don't know. I said, are you all right? I'm all right, she said. I'm with Sid. Tell Michael. And then it was over. And like I say, I don't know what you want to make of it, but I felt I better call. Whew. Jack, I said, has this sort of thing happened to you before? No. Well, like, not a lot, but yeah, it has. You say she identified herself as Rose, Rosie. Did you ever hear her called that? No, of course he hadn't, because her name was Roz. She signed Roz, and that was what everybody knew her as. But her mother had named her Rose, and her mother all her life called her Rosie. When little Rose was registered for kindergarten, it was her teenage sister who registered her, and my aunt thought Rose was too old world sounding, so she just added an L-Y-N to the more glamorous Rosalind, which became my mother's name, Roz. Jack didn't know that when he had the dream. He didn't even know she had died a few months before, and I realized in all that time since she'd passed, I had not for even one moment wondered, like, how she was. I'm fine? Tell Michael? Tell me what? When I was a kid, she and I shared a fascination with ESP and the paranormal aspects of the things that can't be explained. And maybe what she wanted me to know was, yeah, there's more than you can explain. She always really had a vivid imagination. Maybe she had dreamed up an afterlife for herself where she now was with my father and she is fine. I mean, jeepers. Before she died, I called her to urge her to accept the medical treatment that she had refused. I knew she was ready to go, but I felt like it was my duty to try anyway. And she said, oh, Michael, leave me alone. But of course, I couldn't really leave her alone any more, apparently, than she could me.
Cannot guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you. Still you're not alone. No one is alone. Truly, no one is alone. Sometimes people leave. What she'd say?
Who can say what's true?
Nothing's quite so clear now.
Do things, fight things.
Feel you've lost your way.
You decide, but
you are not alone. Believe me, no one is alone.
No one is alone.
leave me.
Truly, you move just a finger. Say the slightest word. Something's bound to linger. Be heard.
No one acts alone. Careful, no one is alone.
People make mistakes.
Fathers.
Mothers.
People make mistakes. Holding to their own. Thinking they're alone.
Honor their mistakes.
Fight for their mistakes.
Everybody makes
one another's terrible mistakes.
Wishes can be right. Giants can be good. You decide what's right. You decide what's good.
Just remember,
someone is on your side.
Our side.
Our side. Someone else is not. While we're seeing our side,
maybe we forgot.
They are not alone. No one is alone.
Hard to see the light now.
Just don't let it go.
Things will come out right now. We can make it so. Someone is on your side. No one is alone.
That's music from Stephen Sondheim, along with the other cool wigs in the Symphony Hall today, Camille Saint-Saëns and Franz Liszt. Thanks to our tellers, Gus Schenker, Aaron Wenger, Sarah Nimes, Leah Lem, and Susan Schenker. I'm Michael Goldberg, back this time next week with another hour of story and song. Stay human, friends.
Anybody see me lately? I'll tell you why. Anybody see me lately? I'll tell you why. I caught something made me so sick that I thought that I would die. And almost did too. First my knees began to tremble, my heart began to pound. First my knees began to tremble, my heart began to pound. Stay with me, got a tune, lost my equilibrium, fell face down upon the ground. I lay down on a cold pavement, tear ran down my face, cause I thought I was dying. You boys know I'm not a religious man, but I sent a prayer out just in case. You never know. Lo and behold, almost immediately I had reason to believe my prayer had been heard in a very special place. But it's what happened. I heard this sound. Yes. Yes. It's harps and angels. Harps and angels coming near. I was too sick to roll over and see him, but I could hear him singing ever so beautifully in my ear. Then the sound began to subside and it sounded like background singers. Voice come down. Not from the heaven above. His voice full of anger from the Old Testament. A voice full of love from the new one. He straightened it up like it was the middle of the day. And I lay there quiet, listening to what that voice had to say. He said, You ain't been a good man. You ain't been a bad man. But you've been pretty bad. Lucky for you, this ain't your time. Someone very dear to me has made another cleric, Lara, and we're here in a bit of a wild goose chase. But I'm gonna tell you a few things that hold you in good stead when it is your time. So you better listen close, I'm only gonna say this once. They lay on the table, better keep your business clean. When you lay you on the table, better keep your business clean. You don't want no backstabbing, ass grabbing, you know exactly what I mean. All right, girls, we're out of here. Now off the wind into the night. Almost immediately I felt better, and I run here to see you, boy. Cause you know we ain't living right, and while it was fresh, I wanna tell you what he told me. He said, lay you on the table, better keep your business clean. Lay you on the table, better keep your business clean. Yes, there won't be no harps and angels coming for you. Be trombones, kettle drums, pitchforks, and tambourines. Sing it like they did for me once. Yes. Beautiful. Wish I spoke French. Actually, the main thing about this story is, for me, there really is an afterlife, and I hope to see all of you there. Let's go get a drink.